All right, welcome to the Retro Game Club podcast, season 2, episode 10, which is also episode 42, which is, as all geeks know, the answer to life, the universe, and everything from The Hitchhiker's Guide. And I am Rob, and with me is someone else with a lot of time on his hand, Hugh.
Yes, here we are providing an essential service to the retro gaming community by recording.
Yes.
Now, this episode might be a little disorganized. Our planned topic was Midwest Gaming Classic Interview. We had people from the show lined up. We were going to do a great set of interviews about what was going on this year. And now we are not. So if this seems a little duct taped together at the last minute, that's largely why. They were kind enough to say they would come on and talk about like the cancellation and refund policy and that kind of stuff. And I said, let's do it next year. They've done a really good job communicating via email what the refund policy is, and don't get a refund. Just save your, you can use your ticket next year. Just use it.
Yeah. But so what's new?
Not too much. So after our last episode, I was just still browsing eBay and, enjoying some Porter and, ended up ordering some Nintendo 64 import games.
Like?
I don't know.
They'll arrive sometime.
They'll arrive. Definitely the Yoshi game.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see the Kirby game. And I still haven't really gotten... I don't want to pay more than, like... And I know it sounds awful, but, like, I don't want to pay more than, like, $15 for Smash Brothers. Because I don't really like Smash Brothers that much. That's why I never owned it on Nintendo 64.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like a $60 game in America still, so... I don't know. It's stupid that like I could, you know, I can't justify paying $15 for like a $60-$70 game. That's the part that's dumb.
So did you buy these with box or just the
cover? Oh yeah, with box. The whole reason is because I thought the boxes looked cool and you know, I'm trying to like sort of slowly shift my game collection from like just mass pile of games to more kind of display oriented, like here's stuff that I like and you know, carving out sections for like game series that I like and that kind of stuff and maybe decluttering a little bit. So like I have a bunch of 3DO games that there's just 0% chance I'll ever play because they're like educational games or just like I like FMV games, but 3DO did some really bad FMV games. So, you know, just kind of like whittling down that kind of stuff and getting more, you know, cool things that I want to display instead.
Stuff you're just never going to use and don't care to display.
Yeah, right. Kind of get rid of that stuff. And eventually, part of it is like, I'm not going to stay in this house for the rest of my life. At least I hope I won't. So at some point, if I want to move somewhere more remote, it's less stuff that I have to pack up later.
Yeah.
What about you? Anything good?
Well, I tore my house apart searching for my Sega Genesis. You know, I moved into this house about... 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and couldn't find it anywhere, and that was really annoying because I seriously like went deep into like under the basement stairs, you know, last box, had to get everything out, and nope, other worthless electronics that I have in boxes. But then I thought, like, you know, when I moved, I did leave a few boxes in my office at work. Now by choice, my office at work is next to the furnace room. I don't know. It's like a nice hum all day long, but I also use it for storage. And yeah, so this whole time it was at work. So I brought it home. I haven't plugged it in yet, but I might be able to do that tonight and finally get back into some Genesis stuff. But yeah, I've been crazy busy, but every once in a while, you know, putting on the Switch's NES or SNES online games, or just turning on my NES or Nintendo 64 and just trying to get something in, you know. Mostly been spending time with our game club games when I've had any minute. But yeah,
I guess it's kind of crazy for me that I actually seem to have less time to play games lately. I'm not sure how it's come to that, but maybe that'll shift in the coming weeks.
Yeah, hopefully it'll all normalize out in a few weeks. But we're kind of living a antisocial, you know, video game player's dream right now. Like, stay home, play games.
Yep.
But, all right, should we dive into this episode? It's been a while.
Yeah. Again, just busy. Well, we've both been really busy. So, a lot of game sales right now that happen to include some free and discounted classic games. So Good Old Games is offering 27 free games. I don't know if there's a limit. Can you actually get all 27? Do they cap you?
That's a good question. I hope you could get them all. There's some good stuff in here like Ultima 4, Ultima mm-hmm. World Adventure 2.
Yeah, Shadow Warrior Complete. Mm-hmm. A lot of like point and click adventure games in here too, at least a couple of good ones. So yeah, it's pretty cool then. I mean, these are games that I maybe weren't, you know, huge sellers anyways, but free game.
They're free. Yeah. And you can't really complain about that, you know. And then Good Old Games also announced that it'll have Mortal Kombat 4 from 1997 for $6 soon.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty good price. And Mortal Kombat 4, I think that was a pretty good one, right?
I thought that was where the series started to try and be more like Killer Instinct. Right, it's kind of my impression of it. Like, it seemed less like a Mortal Kombat game and more like a Killer Instinct game. And maybe that's because of, like, the, you know, the digital, the way they, like, did the character renders. I don't know.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, so Mortal Kombat, you know, out of all the side-scrolling or side-fighting games, it's the one I'm the worst at because I just could never get used to the block button for some reason.
Okay.
So I played this one, but not so much. But a lot of my friends that are into Mortal Kombat, this is one of their favorites. Now, they may have bad taste. I don't know.
Nah, you can like whatever you like. It wasn't really my thing, but.
But this says it's DMR. Yeah, this says it's DMR free. Which, if you bought something, why would there be DMR anyway?
DRM, you mean?
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, DRM that too. Free. Yeah. Both of them. It's free of both of those things.
Yes.
Yeah, Good Old Games, it's just, you just get the game. You just download the game. There's no, they do have like a launch, they have an optional Steam launcher, but if you just want to download it, run it locally, run it in a VM, whatever, they don't restrict you in any way. You know, the secret is Steam really kind of does that too. It has to install the game locally and you can kind of,
Oh, totally, yeah.
But, you know, GOG is pretty blunt about like, we're not doing anything to restrict you playing this game.
Yeah, which is what I really appreciate about them. All right, I think we got one more here.
Yeah, the Capcom Humble Bundle.
This is crazy. So for $1, you get Strider, Mega Man Legacy Collection, Resident Evil Revelations 2, Episode 1, and Resident Evil 2, all in-game rewards unlocked
mm-hmm.
for $1.
Right, and if you pay more than average, the Mega Man X Legacy Collection, a bunch more Resident Evil games, Devil May Cry 5. And then if you pay 20 or more, Street Fighter 30th Anniversary, which again, that's kind of a $20 game by itself. I think mm-hmm. you can buy it at Target for $20. Mega Man 11 and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, including Resident Evil HD Remastered. I mean, Dead Rising 4, Devil May Cry 4. I mean, that's a great deal. So, a lot of cheap games. I mean, we started with 27, 28 games and however many games are in this. I mean, that's a lot of games you could get for like $27. And all right, we got, what is next here? Games that weren't?
Yeah, games that weren't. So it's a new book someone is working on?
Yeah, so gamesthatweren't.com is a nonprofit that catalogs, you know, games that only made it to beta, games that only made it to, you know, kind of, well, they just weren't released. Let's just say that. And they focus on games between 1975 and 2015, which is a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're coming out with a book. Now, this is a nonprofit, so it's not like some guy's going to be making, you know, a lot of money off us. And this is a really nice looking book that, would look great on a coffee table and look fun to flip through, you know. It even has some unreleased peripherals and stuff like that. Almost 650 pages, and I don't see a is there a price here?
Yeah. And for the record, I don't care if they get rich off it. If you produce a good product, yeah, go ahead and get rich. you'll have to edit this part. I don't have... Oh, there it is. I don't have the link in front of me. I was just looking at the pictures of some unreleased 3DO games. you have to subscribe to the newsletter to get updates about the book and when it may be available for purchase.
But this will obviously be in our show notes. And if you're interested, please click on it and click through their site to, get more info. It looks really nice. And more unreleased stuff. A Lobo fighting game was in the works for Nintendo 64, but ultimately canceled, along with these other titles that never saw the light of day. So, Hugh, do you ever watch Did You Know Gaming on YouTube?
Occasionally, yeah. Yeah, I watch some other stuff. I don't subscribe. I'm not really on YouTube a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I've definitely seen a few of their videos.
Yeah, he does a great job at really explaining stuff. Just diving into one topic, kind of like we like to do. And this is on eventhubs.com. It just talks about one of his videos, every canceled game for the Nintendo 64. And this page highlights Lobo, which is a DC character that I don't know much about at all, almost had a fighting game on Nintendo 64.
I think I've heard of Sheriff Lobo. This is not the same character, right?
Probably not. Okay. I have absolutely no idea. I don't know too much about Marvel or DC. Mostly Star Trek and Star Wars is my geekdom. But this is a great video. It shows a lot of I think it's called miniature racing, but it's like a RC Pro-Am type game for the Nintendo 64. Other real racing games, a Hydro Thunder sequel.
Yeah, I looked at that in this video clip, and that looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, that would have been, I think that would have been a good seller. But, highly suggest you go in and watch this video if you haven't. Any listeners out there?
Why did the Nintendo Famicom have a microphone built into the controller?
That's like the beginning of a knock-knock joke, huh?
No, I'm asking a question. Why?
Because karaoke was hot at the time in Japan, and they thought people would like to use their Famicom for karaoke by singing into their controller.
Yep. Not a bad idea, really. But that also explained why they dropped it for America.
Yeah, and it also was almost never used in Japan.
Yeah, it would be kind of hard because you'd be doing karaoke over chip tunes, which I know you can do, but it's not really what people want to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, today they might want to do that because it's kind of hip now.
Right. It was not hip in 1986.
No.
If you said you did chip tune karaoke in 1986, when you were in like junior high, right? Someone would have stuffed you into a locker, true or false?
True, very true. Speaking of chip tunes, on Hackaday, .com, the Ultimate Game Boy Talk. So this highlights a talk from 2016 that this guy does, really diving into how to code and kind of neat tricks for the Game Boy, specifically audio. So if you watch this video and click on the links, there would be nothing you don't know about Game Boy audio programming, which is pretty spectacular.
Cool.
Yes.
Looks hard.
Yes.
You know, but part of like when I got into Genesis programming, I attempted to figure out how to do audio programming. It's pretty difficult. Like, at least for my brain, it's difficult. Maybe for other people, it's easy. So that's why I found someone that had written a library called Echo that you can convert XM, so Amiga mod files, specific format of Mega Mod files, to Sega Genesis chiptunes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So then you just have to find public domain or, you know, thing or appropriately licensed, mod files that people have released. And then you can just convert them. There's some work. It's not just a matter of running them through a piece of software because, like, you know, a mod file can have I don't know what the limit is, but let's just say unlimited number of tracks. In the, mm-hmm. in the Genesis, you're limited by number of tracks, and the samples in the mod file won't really line up to the samples you have on Genesis necessarily, so blah, blah, blah. It's not zero work, but if you don't actually know anything about composing music, it saves you a lot of time. And if you do know anything about composing music, then you can go into like a tracker and, you know, compose your own mod files and convert them.
And not have to write them in assembly.
Not have to write it in assembly, yeah.
All right, I think this next one is yours.
Is it?
It's been a while.
Perils of Willy for ZX Spectrum. Conversion of a VIC-20 game now on ZX or ZX, as everyone else would call it. Did I add this? I don't know. It looks pretty fun. Kind of, it's like a Montezuma's Revenge meets Kangaroo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, single screen platformer.
Yeah. Man, we got to do both Kangaroo and Montezuma's Revenge on here sometime.
Yes. Yes. Kangaroo was one of my first favorite games.
Do you think it's aged well?
No, I do not.
Okay. Kangaroo's one of those games I try every time I see a cabinet, and I'm always just a little bit disappointed. But I have to like try and mentally put myself back in 19... Oh, you know what? If you want to mentally put yourself back in 1983, I was looking at show listings, and like... Today, I guess they would be playing the NCAA tournament, but I guess they aren't. I get it. For the safety of the players, you can't do it right now, because if one player is sick and isn't showing symptoms, you know, 26 people are going to be infected by the end of the game.
Yeah.
So I get it. So I get why you can't play them in an empty arena. But they're playing like the, you know, I guess the best of previous NCAA tournaments, and I saw that today they're playing the 1983 championship. I don't remember which future NBA stars are on there. I can probably kind of guess, based on the school and the year. But like, I think if you spent the day like flipping between that and like the channel that just runs old game shows, you could really
Buzzer?
Yeah, Buzzer. Yeah, I love Buzzer.
I love Buzzer too.
One of my favorite TV stations, possibly the only one I still watch. And if you just flip between those all day, I think you can get yourself back into a 1983 mindset.
That's a great idea.
And then you'll see Kangaroo and be like, wow, this game looks amazing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I actually like Kangaroo on Atari 2600 better than the arcade. That's rare.
Yes. All right. Interact with Atari's 6502 processor in BASIC. So this comes to us from Atari Projects, one of our favorite sites.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another tutorial. It's definitely complicated for me.
Yeah.
He writes it up very simply. Like, it's just these couple steps. They're not very hard. But then you actually have to do the programming part. But this is almost like a easier gateway to do assembly programming on the Atari.
Yeah. Something I might soon have time for some Atari projects.
Yeah. Well, like I said, this is like a very good quick start.
Mm-hmm.
He also has an article from February that we forgot to talk about called, this is basically recommendation on how to play the Goonies on an Atari 8-bit computer. Yeah, not the movie, but the game. And I forgot about this old Goonies game, which is like, it's set in like the last bit of Goonies where they're like on the pirate ship. I think most of the game is set on there. So it's kind of like a Popeye type game. I forget when I played this, but I definitely played this on some old computer and really, really liked it. But it's super YouTube obscure. I don't think anyone has ever played this game.
Huh. Yeah, I think the only Goonies I played is Goonies 2.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also on like my backlog. Like, I've wanted to play Goonies 2 for close to 30 years now, I guess. It's pathetic. And I just never got around to starting it. It looks like a really... Is it good? It looks like a kind of a fun adventure.
Yeah, it's
game.
Good. It has obviously a great soundtrack, too. They had it at the rolling rink I grew up near. So
okay, like I a Play
a
Choice
lot of
10?
Into it. Yeah. Okay. Or I forget if that's a versus. I think it's a versus.
Okay.
Don't Very add cool. us if we got that wrong.
Yeah, we're riffing on where you played Goonies 2 in a roller rink. I was like going to the roller rink. I was like, I can't roller skate. I can barely move 2 inches on a roller skate. But the, you know, part of the roller rink experience was really just the music, the lights, and the arcade games and the bad pizza.
Yep. And for some reason, ours had big pickles that everyone bought.
Yeah. Not a pickle fan, but, okay. I can see that. That checks out.
But yeah, I don't even know why I got on roller skates. I would go make a request to the DJs, probably the Fat Boys or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I would go play video games. Yeah, and eat pizza.
Yeah.
And then struggle in the bathrooms to get to the bathrooms. There were stairs that go down. So if you had to go to the bathroom, you'd either take off your roller skates or try not to kill yourself by going downstairs with roller skates.
All right. So the one I'm thinking of was in Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. We have probably like one listener who's going to geek out at this reference. And I think the bathrooms were attached to like the little locker area where you would put your regular shoes. So you had to go through the lockers to get to the bathroom anyways, if I remember the layout correctly.
That makes more sense.
And I don't know what, it's probably a church or something today. I don't know whatever happened to that roller rink. I'm just saying, like, well, what other kind of thing, coming like, back, what else would fit in a building that big?
Yeah, well, a lot of them do, like, roller derby now. And, like, roller hockey. I went to a wedding at a roller rink. It was actually pretty fun.
Okay.
But, back to retro video games.
Okay.
So, this is probably my favorite article of the week. So, Final Burn Alpha is a MAME, not competitor, but MAME-like emulator for arcade games. And there is a version of it called Final Burn Neo, which is for consoles. And somebody, one of the devs, spent 7 months writing an NES and disk system emulator from scratch. And I guess it's highly accurate and won't run on pretty low-end devices, probably not your Raspberry Pi 2 or something, but maybe the 3 or 4 it could crunch along on. But yeah, so if you're looking for a very highly accurate NES emulator, you should really try this out. And along with this, Final Burn Alpha also got a pretty big update, you know, adding a lot of accuracy to a lot of arcade games, including Final Fight and Star Wars Arcade. And they do mention a few hacks in here that I didn't really get into, but yeah, pretty neat. If you needed another emulator in your life.
Yes, and who doesn't?
And then in other emulation news, the story I originally posted was Launchbox 10.11 got released, but since then, there's not a release date yet for 10.12. But it looks like it's on the horizon. But Launchbox, we talk about all the time. It's a front-end loader for emulators. And it's just really good for game organizing. That's what I like it for. But this adds, let's see, what does this add? It adds GOG and Steam import wizards. So you don't have to import your entire catalog. You can just import some of them. It has better badges, so if you want to mark something as your favorite, or if it's, you know, multi-disc game, or if it's if you have multiple versions installed, you have pretty easy badges that you could see pretty quickly there, and better favorites and better folder management in this. So, yeah, if there's any Launchbox enthusiasts out there, or Big Box, which is their other version, yeah, shoot us an email. Tell us, even send us a screenshot of your setup. Email at retrogameclub.net. That's it for news.
All right. Sorry, I was the roller rink I was referring to is now a fitness center or being converted to one.
Oh, that makes sense.
Sure. the building actually when I found it, it looks like it should be bulldozed. All right. So We kind of threw together a topic literally at the last minute. I think around 8 o'clock last night, we sent an email agreeing to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if it sounds a little bit unplanned, it's because we didn't plan it. So all the sports seasons are canceled. You can't watch sports, even except for pro wrestling. And that's not really, I guess, yes, you don't have to email me that it's fake. I already know this. I suppose you could still do like a golf tournament, right? Like that kind of stuff could still go on.
Well, the Masters was postponed, so maybe not.
Okay. How important is the live audience to golf? I don't know. Anyhow, the players aren't like touching each other, but I guess you have to travel and there's cameras and I get it. There's probably a big crew.
Yeah.
All right. So, we were going to talk about, if you're missing your two favorite sports, I think the thing that's probably most heartbreaking for people is the loss of like the NBA and NHL seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I think those are the two biggest sports that have been canceled so far. Baseball, I think, effectively plays in an empty arena already, so maybe they'll be all right. But yeah, I think this is like a big, big loss. So we want to talk a little bit about a couple recommended basketball and hockey games, and we're each going to pick one game for those sports, and I think you're going to pick ones for people who don't understand or like basketball or hockey, and I'm going to pick ones for people who are fans of the sport.
Yeah, because everyone knows. I don't know.
You can still enjoy
is.
Even if you're not. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So why don't you go first?
Yeah. So the other thing I did with the ones I picked ones that maybe did something groundbreaking for their time. So the first one for hockey, I'm going to pick NHL 94 for Sega CD. This was not the first sports game on CD, but it was definitely the first hockey game to be on a CD platform. You know, mm-hmm. Sega CD had something like 3 football games, and even the TurboGrafx-16 had a football CD game. But this was like a kind of a big deal. It was a port of the, you know, obviously of NHL 94. NHL 94 is still like a very popular game with a small number of people. There's actually a fan community dedicated to updating NHL 94 every year, and you know, doing tournaments, and you know, They do hacks of both like the Genesis and CD version and the Super Nintendo version. I mean, like really, really dedicated. Have you seen NHL94.com before?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. This is like, it's just, it's so amazing what they do out there. But yeah, so they do it. Anyhow, the game itself is like, I think a good balance of realism and fun. Like sports games can get to be too realistic to the point where they're not fun anymore. You've probably run into that, I'm sure. Where like, if you're not a hardcore fan of the game, you know, you're just not gonna, you're not gonna be able to play it, right?
And yeah, there's no entry point.
Right. But yeah. So NHL 94 is still, I mean, like it has all the players, it has the rules, it's a fairly realistic recreation. But it's still very fast-paced and fun and easy to learn the controls. Like, you don't really have to be an expert on hockey to play the game, but if you are an expert on hockey, then you'll still be into it a lot because of the players and, you know, the arenas. Like, it does a lot of things right. I think it kind of strikes a really good balance of the two.
Yeah, yep, and this is one I've played. I think I own this one. I'm almost positive I own this one.
Yeah, I own a physical copy of this. Let's see how much it goes for, just because I'm super curious. Yeah. Maybe I'll sell my copy, who knows? If it turns out this thing goes for like hundreds of dollars. So this is like a $15 game on eBay.
Huh.
Which...
it sold pretty well for that system, you know?
It did. Now, you can get like the Genesis or Super Nintendo version, I'm sure, for $1 because it's a EA Sports game, right?
But is the only thing they updated the audio in this for the CD version?
The audio, I'm sure I have to look at screenshots side by side. I felt like the graphics were a little bit better, too. But you have like actual like CD, like pipe organ music and digitized crowd sounds. Like, mm-hmm. you can actually put this, if you just want to listen to crowd sounds in pipe organ, you can just drop that NHL 94 CD in your CD player.
My choice did not have crowd sound. Well, not digitized. Mine was Ice Hockey for NES. And it's a very cartoony game. You could play it on Switch now. And yeah, it's pretty fast. You know, it's 4-on-4. Well, I guess 5-on-5 because of the goalie. And you get to pick between, you know, big guys and medium-sized guys and skinny guys, going from slower to faster and stronger to weaker. My go-to is all skinny guys, and I just avoid everyone. This is the first game that I remember that you could actually get in a fight. A first sports game that you could actually get in a fight in. Now, I'm not sure if that's true. It's just my memory of it. And you could get everyone in a fight in this. And it's pretty funny. You know, there's dust coming from the ground and they're just circling around each other. And yeah, very cartoony, very fun. Great control. I have played this game for hours and hours and hours. Growing up and as an adult.
Yeah, so I've played this game a ton too. I like that you can pick countries that no longer exist for your team. Yeah. The computer AI is terrible. Mm-hmm. If you can't beat the computer like 20 to nothing, then you probably should give up playing video games. I get like first time you play, that's not going to be the case. But, you know, the reality is that's, you know, it's a really easy game to beat. You mentioned the fights. Once a team has two players that have been ejected for fighting, fights never trigger again. So you can do whatever you feel like at that point. this is all off the top of my head for me playing a bunch of it. Yeah, I usually go like three fat guys, one skinny guy. Because if you're a skinny guy, if your skinny guy runs into a fat guy, I mean, the fat guy can knock over anybody. That's the key difference. Like,
he's the Bowser of the game.
The Bowser, yeah. And he also has the hardest shot. There's crazy codes where you can like, where the puck never decelerates. Have you used that one?
No, I haven't used any codes in this.
Okay, so that's a fun one. That's basically, I'm going off the top of my head here. Like the puck will never slow down until a player gets to it. So if you can just crank it, you can get it's like spinning around the ice rink just endlessly. That's a fun one. There was one other code. What was the other code here? Speedy Puck. Oh yeah, no goalies is the other one.
Wow. That would be way different.
Yeah. I mean the game's already pretty easy, so when you add no goalies to the equation, I guess it actually makes it harder because now the computer can score. So yeah, fun game, definitely. If you have a Switch and you have the NES subscription or whatever they call it.
Yeah, definitely pull this one up. What's your NBA pick?
So NBA one, I actually fired this one up yesterday just to try it out again. NBA 2K1 for Dreamcast. Now I know there's other 2K NBA games, and some of them are better. This one was kind of groundbreaking because it was the first one to have online play. If I open up my copy of it here, there's even a little flyer here about free online service. Let me read this back to you here. It's expired now. Enjoy this game online. To play online, enter your ISP information on the network play screen. Please note, free trial ends June 30th, 2001.
Oh, you missed out.
Yeah, I missed out by quite a bit. But this is like, this is a really, really fun NBA game. And it's got all the players, you know, from every team. It's got classic teams, you know, like 1980s East All-Stars kind of stuff you can do if you want to have a team that's basically invincible. I played it as the Chicago Bulls. I forgot the Bulls were a complete garbage team this year. I think they are ranked close to last of all the teams, maybe second to last when you go through, like, each team has sort of a score associated with them for, you know, how good or bad they are, and the Bulls were pretty much the bottom. But if there was a different team you liked in that era or a different player, you of course can go back and play as them. And again, this is like, you know, it's fairly realistic looking. I don't necessarily need NBA games that look like the actual players, but this, yeah, they look a lot like the actual players. Similar kind of movements and you know, in stats. Overall, it's I think a pretty good I want to say, pretty good in terms of like accuracy of like how good or how fast or, you know, how, what kind of shooter the player is.
The play control is great.
Yeah.
Dunking and three free throws and the camera. Dreamcast and N64, I think, had a problem with camera angle.
Okay.
And this did not.
Yeah.
You know, not having the two analog sticks.
Yeah, the camera on this game is actually really good. Yeah. So, I didn't run into a problem with the camera at all. I do have a hard time with the free throw shooting. That is actually pretty tough on this. But outside of the free throw shooting, it plays pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it looks fantastic. I mean, in 2001, this looked real.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it still looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Let's see how much this goes for. Cast NBA 2K1. Again, no preparation because this is, say, $7 on eBay.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Your pick is going to be more than $7, I predict.
Yeah. So I went with an easy choice of NBA Jam on 32X. Does 32X have NBA Jam and NBA Jam Tournament Edition?
No,
I think it does.
No, 32X just has NBA Jam Tournament Edition.
Okay.
Sega CD has NBA Jam. And then Sega Genesis has both.
Well, the 32X one's my favorite. It's just as close to arcade perfect, I think. And I think if you're listening to this podcast, you've played NBA Jam. And it's just a delightful game that has, you know, countless memes have come from it. And you know, the fact that one of the coders was from Detroit and made it so if you play the Pistons against the Bulls, the Pistons have the edge programmatically. Mm-hmm.
Right. Unlike how the NBA worked in that era.
Yes. Hey, we had 2 years there. But, yeah, I don't know what to say about this one. Everyone's played it. If you haven't played the 32X version, go play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I own two copies of this. I actually have, somehow I came across a new in-box version of it.
Wow.
It was like
did
at a thrift
store.
No, I already had an open one. it was like at a thrift store. I don't know. So I may end up eBaying it. I don't know. I can probably get a couple $100 for it, but.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really do like the 32X version of NBA Jam too. I'd say it and like the Sega Saturn are my two favorite versions of it.
Huh. I haven't played the Saturn version, but the Saturn was the console that I played the least, so that's not surprising.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember NBA Jam Tournament Edition when I got the Genesis component adapter. That was the first game I played in it to see how that looked, you know, upscaled. And it looks pretty great. I mean, the 32X, you forget, really could do good looking games. I know a lot of the games are just kind of slightly enhanced versions of Genesis games, and yeah, NBA Jam Tournament Edition is kind of just that, but it does look really great. If you have like an upscaler or something, it looks really, really nice.
Yeah, I would argue that this is the best console NBA game. And that's my argument. I would have nothing else to say about it.
Yeah.
I did throw a few mentions in here. Again, because I'm from Detroit, I had to put Bill Laimbeer Basketball for NES. It is not a good game, but if you're if you're one of the two Pistons fans that listen to this show, for people that don't know, we have a lot of listeners in the UK and stuff. That era of the Pistons was referred to as the Bad Boys, and the rest of the world hated them, as they probably should have, because they fought a lot, and fighting in basketball is not classy at all. And so Bill Laimbeer put out a video game where it's pretty much like Arch Rivals, but top down in the future with monsters and robots and stuff, but not great.
Yeah, and that had young Dennis Rodman for people who are not NBA experts, but everyone knows who Dennis Rodman is.
Yes.
Probably more well known for his time with the Spurs and Bulls, but sort of young pre hair coloring Dennis Rodman on that team.
Yes. And pole position 2 I picked because I know it's not NASCAR, but NASCAR and other racing will probably be canceled or postponed for a bit. And yeah, Pole Position 2, specifically on 7800, I thought is a great sports games for people that don't like sports. And mm-hmm. then I also put Looney Tunes B-Ball for the NES. It's a really classy basketball game. You get to throw pies at people and stuff, and you're the Looney Tunes characters. It plays great. You get level ups, and yeah, you earn level ups, I should say. But I don't know if you've played any. I know you've played Pole Position too, but I don't know about Looney Tunes B-Ball.
I have maybe played Looney Tunes B-Ball once.
Yeah, it's not bad. It really isn't.
Yeah, I know there is a Space Jam basketball game. Because my kids recently discovered Space Jam on Netflix because they have a lot of free time.
Yes.
And they were asking if there was a video game for it. And I said, well, there almost has to be an NBA, a Space Jam, sorry, video game. So I don't actually own it though. So they're out of luck.
So that is our phoned-in topic of the episode.
Yes. And I am dumb. Game Club games. You want to talk about these?
Yeah. Sure, why not? Yeah, so admittedly, I played these for a lot, actually, but right after we picked them, and then it has been a bit. So, again, sticking to the theme of this phoned-in episode. But yeah, Batman on the NES. It was by Sunsoft, and yeah, it's a side-scrolling Batman game that has fantastic play control, fantastic graphics, great music. Definitely the Sunsoft feeling type music. I'm pretty sure popular developer Kojima helped code this one. Yeah, like I said, if you've played any Sunsoft game, the music is on brand. And yeah, to me, it kind of feels like a Castlevania type game. Castlevania meets Strider on NES, except you don't get thrown back when you get damaged. Mm-hmm. And the wall jumping is actually better than Strider. It has some cutscenes, well, pixel art that looks like it was just from the original Batman movie. I don't know if it is or not, probably not. And yeah, you fight a lot of bosses. It's a difficult game, and the end boss is the Joker. And it ends pretty much like the movie does.
Yeah, now I've never made it all the way to the last boss in this game, but I really do like this game. I think they did a great job with the NES palette. I think that stands out right away. And yeah, the play control is like it's like a very fixed version of earlier side-scrolling games.
Yeah, and it's almost like a puzzle platformer too, because you can't get to certain platforms unless you kind of fall and then wall jump as you're falling. Yeah, I have never gotten to the Joker either. I haven't even gotten close, and I have played this a lot. But I definitely recommend anyone playing it. And you posted a few ROM hacks for this.
Yeah, so in the past week, by coincidence, there were ROM hacks that just basically replace it with other lead characters and other, you know, movies or TV shows. So there's a Sherlock one, and then I think one that's a better fit, a Crow hack.
Yeah, which again, the Crow is in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And the Crow one looks great.
Yeah, it does. I mean, because they change the cutscenes, it's not like they just swap out the main sprite. I mean, they make a lot of changes to it,
backgrounds and everything.
Yeah. So I was pretty impressed with the Crow hack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you get into this game this time at all?
Just a bit. Like I said, I've played it a little bit. I'm not real good at it. Mm-hmm. I'm not good at Ninja Gaiden either, and I always kind of felt like it was a Ninja Gaiden type game.
Very, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I've never really made it too far into the game.
And want to dive into your game?
Yeah, with my little bit. I went with Stinger, which is a sort of cutesy side-scrolling shooter game for the NES. You know, you control a ship, you have, you know, a beam and then a bomb, and you use the bomb to hit things on the ground. You don't really, it's not so much because there's enemies on the ground, it's more because that's where there's, like, you know, bonus point items. And then you have a second attack, which isn't really an attack. It's like a thing to knock objects out of clouds. And you knock like these bells out of clouds. And then the more you hit them, they will turn into other power-ups. So you hit them X number of times and they turn into a different kind of power-up. But if you hit them too many times, then they lose their magical bell ability, I guess.
And they're so easy to miss, too.
Yeah. So you don't want to do that. But you use it to basically get, you know, stronger weapons or shadows, whatever. You know, basically upgrade your ship. It's a pretty easy game. This is one of the few shooters I can actually play all the way through. I think a whole playthrough is only about 20 minutes. It's not an especially long game. And, you know, it's all very kind of cute levels. A lot of, I don't know if you would call it a cute-em-up or not. Maybe that's not the right term.
I think so. I think it would be. Now on YouTube, a complete playthrough is 16 and a half minutes. And now this, you know, the screen scrolls at a fixed pace, so I don't think there's a way to speed run and get it faster.
Yeah, no, if you look at the speedrun leaderboard, I mean, it's about 1 second difference between all of them, and no one can ever really, I don't think you can ever beat it. Basically, I mean, these people just figured out how to defeat the bosses, the end stage bosses in about a second or less. Mm-hmm. There also are, I forgot to mention, overhead stages. So it starts off as a side scroller, and then there are overhead stages as well.
Wait, mine's us overhead the whole time.
The first stage is side-scrolling for sure.
Oh, I've only played Twinbee. I didn't play Stinger.
Aha, well, there's your problem. No, Stinger alternates between side-scrolling and overhead.
Huh. I did not do my research.
No, that's all right. You know, this I can't get this as in a game for everyone. I played a lot of this game back in the day. It was maybe because again, it's the only shooter I was like reasonably good at.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a game where you could just kind of relax with, too. You know, it doesn't move too fast. Oh, yeah, the Stinger looks a lot better. Well, one thing I want to note, I love the circuit board background.
Okay.
In Twinbee. In Twinbee also, when you die, your ship turns into a skeleton.
Yeah, like
it's
a ghost.
A skeleton ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
But yeah, I really enjoy that game. And again, the one I played is on Nintendo Switch Online service. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you call it. I don't know if Stinger is available anywhere.
Oh, so yeah, right. So regular, so Twinbee's on the NES, the Switch thing, but not Stinger, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Hence the confusion. Yes. Yeah, I see. Well, hold on, really? Hold on. I have to have my Switch in front of me. All right, this is the exciting part of the show where I turn on the Switch. Let's see here. What is this? Nintendo.
Stinger's available for about $11. Oh, $2 on eBay.
All right, let's see. Nintendo Entertainment System. Nintendo Switch Online. There's something new to play. Oh, I haven't turned this on in a little while. Great. What's new? Eliminator, Boat Duel, and Shadow of the Ninja. Okay. You're right. Twinbee, which the cover looks like Stinger. Look at that. I'll hold this next to the microphone. All right. So, what do you want to tease what we are going to talk about next time?
Yeah. So, we've had a request for Windows 3.1 or Windows 3 games in the past. And so, I picked one that's specifically for Windows 3.1. It can be played on Windows 95 and 98. And there is a SNES port, Metal Marines. It's one of my all-time favorite games, believe it or not. Hmm. I am horrible at it.
I have never played this. What kind of game is it?
It's a strategy military game, but more like Military Madness than like a Civilization type game. Oh. I think you will really like it.
Okay. Do I have to install Windows 95 or something to play it?
No. No, I think you could do Wine will work fine.
All right.
Or SNES.
Yeah, I may go with the SNES version out of convenience.
Now, I'll say this in the next episode, too. The reason why I feel it's better in Windows 3.1 is because you have your own window and the AI enemy has his own window. and the missiles you shoot go between the windows, like literally across your desktop. And it's a really cool effect that I did not know Windows was even capable of doing. So even if you play the SNES version, please look at a Windows 3 version on YouTube or something. What are you going with?
I'm going to go with Freeway. I was in the mood for something very simple. And there are very few games more simple than Freeway. This is an Activision game for Atari 2600.
Well, if you play any of these games with us, or any retro games, or do anything retro, please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net. And we have a few emails here.
All right, let's see. Majors just talks a little bit about the Midwest Gaming Classic cancellation. Also knowing that every other event, that at least through April, that he was planning to go to has been canceled. And I guess everyone kind of understands the situation. Extended stay hotels. They might be bad, but Red Roof Inn is worse. Oh, our new sponsor's not going to like that. I did stay in a Red Roof Inn once, and it was indeed terrible. All right, 6502 CPU. recently saw this and reminded him it's a disintegrated circuit project to make it complete. He has a link to something called the Monster 6502. It's actually the URL, monster6502.com. And this is someone that made a really huge 6502.
Yeah, you could see how it works. Like, by made, it's made in real life, not on a computer, right? Yeah.
Yes. So it's huge. He actually knows another Pico collector. So I guess he worked at Babbage's and they did have the Pico there. And he knows other person who collects the Pico because it's really cheap. Yeah, it's true. I think it is one of the cheapest. I think that and like the 7800 are maybe the two cheapest systems to collect. Stop pronouncing Tekken like Taken. Okay.
No. That's how I pronounce it.
I didn't even notice. All right. Japanese versus U.S. power. This is the difference between 100 volt and 110, 120. It's usually safe to run Japanese arcade cabinets in American wall outlets. I don't know, that word usually worries me. I would certainly blow it up. Game Shark as cart converter mentions that the Genesis X band can also work for that purpose. Although some Genesis games are still region locked regardless. And I actually have a note on that. So yeah, when you write a Genesis game, there's a section in the header where you specify what regions your game can run in, and it's got three. You can write. There's more space than this, but you can either write J, U, or E in there. You know, for Japan, USA, or Europe, or you can write J, U, E, or J, U, or J, E, whatever combination of regions you want to support on your cartridge, you can put in there. A lot of games I've looked at just put J, U, E, which means you can plug it. Assuming the cart fits, it'll run in any system, but some people do hard lock that to J or U or E, so then it only runs in certain type of hardware. That's at least my understanding of how it works. Japanese versus U.S. box art agrees that Japanese box art is almost always better, and can't think of a case where the U.S. box is better than the Japanese box. That's probably true. A little surprised you've never heard of Die Hard Game Magazine. I'm sure on archive.org you can get all of them by now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
7800.
I may have heard of it.
You have heard of it now?
Deleted that brain. No. I may have just deleted that brain cell back in the day. You know. But I do.
Yeah, know. I'm a little. I guess see. I'd be surprised if they aren't. On. I see retromags.com has them. I don't know if archive.org seems to have some of them. I don't know. This would be like the one, if I could get like a digital collection of like an old game magazine, I would probably take this one just because, again, it had a lot of like, here's what you're missing out on in Japan coverage. What else here? And a quick comment on the 7800 versus NES. He had an old friend who bought a 7800 over the NES back in the 80s because he was a diehard Atari fan and because Nintendo was new and therefore unreliable to produce a good game system. The early games for them were actually close enough that it was a tough call. So some number of people bought it, presumably because it said Atari, which is the opposite of why people buy a system today. But he hadn't really played either of our Game Club games. Do you want to get the next email?
Yeah. So Jason writes in, and he really likes the Batman on NES game. He played it when he was new in high school. His friend bought it, and they eventually beat it, but he could not. And he remembered the animation was so great that he had a Genesis at the time, but he kept going to this NES Batman game because, you know, there were some great animations like the gun firing and stuff like that. And so, yeah, thank you, Majors and Jason, for those emails. And we have a few social media posts there that Zach curated for us.
All right. Lots of people seem to like Batman. They think it is Batman on NES. A lot of comments about it being the best of the NES or best Batman game ever. We talked about console memory cards.
Yeah, we talked. We mentioned how some third-party ones just kind of flake out. I think briefly a few episodes ago, and Zach asked that question on social media. And yeah, Wolf W said he never had an official N64 memory card, but he had a performance one that often got corrupted.
So this is what I noted. Yeah, performance memory card plus. Did I mention that I bought one of these? Just like last weekend?
Possibly. I don't remember, though. So, it's been a while.
Yeah. I know it's been a while since we recorded. So I went, there was an estate sale near my house. It was before you weren't supposed to do anything. So like, it must have been two weeks ago. Back when you could still go to an estate sale and cough on people. and they didn't really have a lot of game stuff. They had like a couple, there was like a couple GameCube games. But then I went down in the basement because the basement's where you always find the best stuff. And yeah, they had Nintendo 64, this exact one, Performance Memory Card Plus. So picked that up because it was, you know, a couple cents or whatever. And the other thing they had in the basement was on VHS tapes, like homemade VHS tapes, like just seasons and seasons of Denver Bronco games. If anyone's interested in that, I could go back and see if they still have them. I assume they won't throw it out. And then they had like the entire run of Twin Peaks from TV on VHS. And I gotta admit, like, if I had a way to digitize VHS tapes, like I just had that set up here, that would have been tempting because I would love to see what the commercials on Twin Peaks were.
Yeah.
Who was advertising on Twin Peaks in the 90s?
Yeah. Huh.
Any other, let's see. Oh, God, did you talk about this one? The one with the pages?
No, I forget this one.
Yeah, this is so awful. So we also got a comment about a third-party PlayStation control memory card where you had a button on the memory card to turn pages. So, like, the screen would show, like, one page of save games, and you'd have to click a button, like, on the memory card to flip ahead.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, so I've used one of these. It is as bad as they're describing.
And yeah, a few more comments. It seems like PS1 and N64 tied for worst memory card experiences.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing was, like, Nintendo 64, memory cards are just so unnecessary, right? Most of the games had battery saves.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, I only really bought one just because so then I wouldn't have a giant hole in the back of my controller.
Were they?
See, like,
yeah.
Like, for instance, I use a Nintendo 64 controller for my for my PC controller, and I have a memory card in there just so it visually looks right. I don't know.
Yeah.
Silly.
And a few notes in here about Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
Yeah. A lot of Mike Tyson.
Mike S.
talk.
Writes. Yeah, that he actually beat it in 91 without cheat codes.
Okay.
And that he's been listening to the podcast since episode one. So thank you very much
for
that. Jim G recommends watching Mike Tyson Mysteries on Adult Swim, which I haven't seen it, but I heard it's pretty funny. So now I have a reason to go check it out.
Yeah, I heard. Sorry, like I said, I think, did I joke that Mike Tyson would probably take any project? Is that what I was joking about?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah, because I think Mike Tyson probably made $150 million as a boxer, right?
But he spent it all.
A lot of it, yeah. Lost an awful lot of it. And, yeah, we could probably get him on the show. I don't know. I'm really not even sure if I'm joking right now. Like, I wonder. But yeah, we do want to line up more interviews. I actually have enjoyed the interviews we've done. We got to line up a few more.
Yeah, again, it's just because it's been crazy. And to get us interviews, you know, Hugh or I have to email people and plan it out and yada, yada, yada. So it's just been,
yeah. I mean, I know
until things calm down a little
bit. We make it a point to try to not talk about current events too much. It's really hard not to right now. But I would imagine a lot of people, like, this might be a good time to get some people on because, you know, if you have like events that have been canceled and that kind of stuff, this might be a really easy time for us to line up, you know, a few interviews.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good idea.
But again, if you're listening and you have a project of some sort that you want to come in and plug, we will literally talk to anyone, including Mike Tyson, if he's listening.
Yes, absolutely. So please email us at email@retrogameclub.net. That's email@retrogameclub.net. And if you're on Twitter, it's @RGCpodcasts. And on Facebook, if you don't want to see any news on Facebook, you could just go to facebook.retrogameclub.net, and it takes you right to our page. And there's a lot of great discussion there that it's pretty cool because it's gotten to a point where sometimes, I mean, you're not on Facebook, Hugh, but sometimes Zach or I aren't even involved in some of the conversation that's going on. So the community really took off and it kind of is its own beast now. So it's pretty neat. And so far, everyone's been extremely cool. So
yeah, we don't have to ban
sincere
anyone.
Sincere thank you for that.
That's what you're saying.
Yes. Yes. No garbage white supremacists or anything interacting with us. So that is good.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll end that episode on this note, and hopefully we'll get another episode out to you soon. You and I have been talking about our schedule for the next few weeks, and hopefully, yeah, it slows down a little bit for us, and we'll get some recordings in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So again, our games are Freeway and Metal Marines.
Yes.
That's the next episode.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.